Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th day of July already, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing... Don't say that like you're calm and collected. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
As he's tossing stuff around.
Yeah.
Our regular donut shop was closed today, so I could have been on time or get donuts from another shop.
It's fair. It's perfectly fair.
Hey, no, we're not going to complain.
Yeah. We're not complaining. I'm just amused. All right. While Steve finishes setting up, listen, he's late for a good cause, so
yep.
Give him a break. On Monday, Google shipped security updates to address a high-severity, zero-day vulnerability in its Chrome web browser that it said is being exploited in the wild. The vulnerability relates to a heap overflow flaw in the WebRTC component that provides real-time audio and video communication capabilities in browsers without the need to install plugins or download native apps. That's the thing we use at Mastermind Lounge. It works very, very well. Heap buffer overflows, also referred to as heap overrun or heap smashing, occur when data are overwritten in the heap area of memory, leading to arbitrary code execution or denial of service conditions. Credited with reporting the flaw in July 1 of 2022 is Jan Wojtasek from the Avast Threat Intelligence Team. It's worth pointing out that the bug also impacts the Android version of Chrome. As is usual, the case with zero-day exploitation, details pertaining to the flaw as well as other specifics related to the campaign have withheld to prevent further abuse in the wild and until a significant chunk of users are updated with a fix. This marks the resolution of the fourth zero-day vulnerability in Chrome since the start of the year. Users are recommended to update to version 103.0.5060.114. That's 103.0.5060.114 for Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, and to version 103.0.5060.71 for Android to mitigate potential threats. Users of Chromium-based browsers such as Microsoft Edge, Brave, Opera, and Vivaldi are also advised to apply the fixes as and when they become available. Of course, Edge won't be available until the next patch Tuesday, so the bad guys will have a field day for a couple of weeks. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is update Chrome browser to patch zero day. And your choices are, I'm already patched, thanks. I'll patch immediately. I'll get to it, relax. Going commando, baby. Patch, and others. So far, we have 22 votes, and I'm already patched, thanks, has half of them. So that's nice. And, of course, many of you will have much more to say than that. So if you head on over to our website at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, that's also where you vote in the poll. It's right at the top of the page. It's hard to miss. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 9 July 22, update Chrome browser to patch zero day. And if you didn't write down the latest version number, it's also in my post on that forum post. That is in that post. So definitely do that. We are really at a point now where, you know, exploits have for the longest time been mostly automated. So, you know, they propagate at the speed of computers.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be updated. And yes, many of them start out life as targeted attacks at particular individuals or groups. But remember, any exploit that's out in the wild, somebody's going to grab it and start sending it out to everybody.
Yep.
So, you know, when you read one, you need to know that it could hit you at any time because computers don't care. They don't care who you are, where you are. They'll hit you and then see what they can find. And if they can't find anything, they'll just screw up your machine anyway because they don't care. So make sure you're up to date. If you're using Edge or Vivaldi or Opera or, you know, another Chrome-based browser other than Chrome, be very careful what you do and where you go as you continue to use that browser until it gets updated, which could be a while. So be aware and be careful.
Yeah, I was surprised. I turned on my Raspberry Pi 400, and that thing wound up doing a major update today.
Yeah, there were lots of them.
Went up to 22.04.
Yep.
Because it hadn't been on in a little while because I've been busy with other stuff. And it's like, well, I think I'll come back in a while because I just put the window up in the corner and it was like, but I'm still trying to get my SQL to work. I'm trying to run this I'm trying to run this one program, and it says it can't get the MySQL server to go. I don't know.
Have you installed it? You got to install it. You got to set a root password, and then it should boot up every time.
I tried to look through the library for MySQL. You know, I put the app in there for the client, and
It's not the app. You got to have the MySQL server.
I didn't see it in the store.
Hiding.
They're calling it Maria.
Maria.
Please stop. I'm begging you. Stop.
Hey, I know a song for once.
That is unusual.
That's very good, actually. Yeah, you should be able to put in MySQL itself. They have the source and the tuner and all that stuff. But MariaDB is basically MySQL. So if you don't have MySQL server.
Right, I don't. Because when I went to the store, you know, I'm running Netsubuntu, Ubuntu. So when I open up the window for the store and I put in MySQL, it shows a bunch of them, and it had one there, but it wasn't the server.
Yeah, look for Maria.
Maria.
MariaDB, Maria Database.
Okay.
And they have both a client, which you don't really need at this point, but they have the server core and the full server, which you may need. MariaDB, somewhere in that list. And so MariaDB server
because I'm trying to install this one logging program,
right?
And they finally got around to updating it, and of course, you know, I've downloaded the TAR program, tried installing that, and I'm in the midst of doing that, but it was also wanting the SQL.
Yeah, that should work. Anyway, make sure you. Yeah, I don't have either installed on this machine. I'm using SQLite for most of the stuff I do, but you can load MariaDB, which is essentially MySQL.
Same thing,
yeah. Yeah.
It'll work.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give that a shot because, like I say, I got the update for the program, and that's the whole problem, though, especially learning a new operating system. If you don't use it a lot,
right?
Remembering how to install stuff is a challenge because I'll admit downloading the stuff, you know, through the terminal window, downloading the program, and then getting to unpack because the TAR program is technically a zip file for folks if they don't know,
right?
And you've got to sit there and give it commands in a terminal window, So if you've never done that, that can be a little intimidating to some folks that if they've never done it. But I'm used to it from back in the days working for programming just at RIT.
Right, right.
Back in the day, we had
so
to log
you should
in.
Be able to load MariaDB, or you could load you can load that through the Software Center, which is just like the Microsoft Store or
yep.
the Apple Store. So
yeah, I'll go go
you
through can, there.
You should be able to load it through there, and then it tells the operating system if you're looking for MySQL, come to me. Basically,
yeah.
how that
yeah.
works.
that'll work.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
I'm back again, guys. This time I'm a bit worried. I just got a text message that said, and I'll just read it to you. It says, my name account was used internationally at Google Star temporary hold in UK for $1.02. For questions, contact phone number, stop to end. What is that?
It's a scam. If you, depending on, it doesn't say a bank or anything like that. It just says Google, yeah?
It says Google Star temporary hold in United Kingdom for $1.02. And it hit me three successive times. Now, of course, I just opened it at at 11:58 this morning. And I went to Google and typed in, Google temporary hold. I get information, but I'm not quite understanding what I'm reading concerning that.
Yeah. If you have a Google account.
Yeah, and I do.
Then you should be able to go to look at that account.
Pay.google.com.
At pay.google.com. If you see an entry for that $1.02, then dispute it there. Otherwise, it's a scam.
Yeah, they want you to reply or click on whatever the link that is, and then they'll probably ask for your Google password so you can...
So they can verify your you.
Yeah, and then they'll start buying things on your Google account,
right.
Your Google money.
So anytime, and this is for everybody, not just you, Larry, anytime you get any kind of message like that that says your bank or you know some place where you have an account... Go check that account directly. Do not click on the links. Do not call the phone numbers. Go directly there on your own browser to check to see if, in fact, money did leave your account. If it did, then decide whether or not you're going to dispute it or whatever it is you're going to do. And if it isn't, then you know it's a scam and just ignore it. So that's what you should do. I know it's
pain in the butt.
It's a pain in the butt, and it's also worrying. I get that.
And the problem has become, since there's so many of these fake messages, the real companies aren't going to send any messages like that because they know you can't trust any of them and you shouldn't trust any of them.
Right.
Which is unfortunate because then you'll get a postal letter a week later saying there's a problem, and by then it's too late.
You're right.
So far, postal fraud is a federal offense.
Right.
But internet fraud is not.
Is not. Yeah. So, yeah, in general, anytime you get any sort of text message, email, whatever, instant message, some whatever, Facebook, I don't care what it is, check on your own. Don't click on the links. Don't call the numbers. Check on your own. And 99.999 times out of 100, you'll find that there's... Well, nothing in your real account.
My rule of thumb still applies. If you have to stop and think about it,
yeah,
delete it.
Yeah, they want you to be worried and scared and click the link to stop an unauthorized charge.
Right.
Yep. Just delete it, and if it's really something, it'll come back.
But I say go to your account, you know, directly using your browser.
I did that, and I'm looking at, as Steve was talking, I typed it in. My activity has come up, and... Of course, I don't see any activity for that.
Yeah, it's a scam.
Yeah,
it's
nothing
a scam.
Has been charged on your
Absolutely
Google account.
Absolutely a scam. Delete it and move on.
Now, I was mightily tempted to call the number, but I didn't. But
good.
If you call that number, would that instantly infect you or something?
Might. Well, it's unlikely to infect you with something. What it's going to do is hook you to a human being who's going to ask you to let them into your computer or give you your Google account or, you know, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. There was a scam a couple of weeks ago that made the rounds where someone would be trying to break into your Apple ID, and Apple's got two-factor codes on. And more than just a text message, it's a notification code, like an authenticator app. And so they would call you. So it had to be a pretty targeted attack. They would call you, and the caller ID said Apple, and they would claim there's something going on in your account, and we're going to send you a six-digit code. Please tell us that code so we can verify it's you. So then they log into your Apple ID. They already had your password because that leaked from somewhere else. You get the two-factor code. You give it to them. They now log into your account. They can spend all your Apple money because they have access to your account now. So it's a little bit harder than SIM swapping or spoofing somebody's cell phone number for a text message. But they're convincing enough that it's lucrative. That's the problem. There are so many people that get
really
tricked
don't
by
know.
This.
Yeah,
that
they
don't
really
know,
don't.
Yeah, that it's a lucrative job. In fact, there's services now. You can hire a service to scam money for you.
Yep.
You don't have to do it yourself.
Yep.
Okay, well, I was just worried enough that I went into my personal bank account, checked, looked around, nothing was out. But I'll tell you why it prompted me. I just went up to a local business to get some stuff in my garden. My card was declined. So I said, okay, what's the problem? So I couldn't get back home fast enough.
Right.
I'm checking my phone messages, and I get this. And I'm thinking, have I been hacked? Should I try to go to my bank, shut the card down? And then I was getting ready to go ballistic, and I think, let me call the guys.
Yep. Well, I'm glad you did.
If that card happened to be tied to a Google Pay account, then theoretically the message you got could have been legitimate. But if what you're buying has nothing to do with Google, then just a coincidence.
If you can't find that charge at your bank or your Google account or anywhere else, then no, it isn't legitimate.
And we are seeing an issue with especially in our store, with credit cards being declined because there's higher fraud protection, which is good. And especially at our computer store where we sell expensive computers, it's very frequently above a routine threshold. So credit card companies watch what your routine threshold of spending is. And quite often, if you have your bank app on your phone, there'll be a pop-up and said, are you trying to do this charge? And you can say, yes, this is me. Or otherwise, you call the phone number on the back of the card. But it's getting to be that credit cards are being denied more for fraud now than actually for balance.
Because it's costing the bank so much money.
Yeah.
Right.
Because there's so many schemes out there that, you know, for stealing money, that they're being a little more proactive and trying to protect you.
You should call your bank, find out why your card was denied.
And I plan to do that because I got hacked about 5 or 6 months ago. They shut it down. Since then, I put every protection known to man on it.
Right.
And then I went right into my account. There's no charges on my account. There's no nothing. The money is there.
Well, sometimes.
But they try to panic you with these scary messages so that you'll call the phone number and give them your information.
The thing of it is, the way he can quick check it to maybe get some peace of mind if his bank isn't open right now is go over to that bank and say to the ATM and just try using it there. Just check on a balance or, you know, see if it reads it or that you could even take out, say, $5 or $10.
Oh, got it.
That would give you at least peace of mind to know that, because it could have been a bad read. It could have been the place's card reader.
Yeah,
I've seen that happen a number of times. Yeah. Matter of fact, I was at Walmart one time months ago, and I put the card through and said, no, bad card. And I go, no, it's not. I just used it for gas. So go to your bank. Like I say, you can walk right up to the ATM, put it in. If it reads it, say take out $20, then it gives you the peace of mind at least for today.
Right.
Okay. Well, I won't hold you any longer, but you guys are a national treasure.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate
thank you much.
That.
Okay. Thank you much, guys.
Have fun. Bye-bye. Yeah, I recommend that everybody, at least once a day, if not more, check your accounts. Check your accounts. It takes all of about 3 minutes to log on to all your accounts, take a look at the balance, what's gone out, what's pending.
my wife always used to make fun of me for reconciling every receipt as I got it that night. And now I'm mad at myself because there's like 3 days of receipts on my desk I haven't got to yet.
Yeah.
Well, I had, 3 days.
I went a little ballistic the other day because I had this huge... I get notices when unusual activity happens in my account. I got this huge withdrawal for my account, and it took me a while to realize, oh, yeah, that was the electrician who came and put our wires back up after the last storm. I don't know why it took him so long.
Yeah.
But, okay, that's
legit.
That's legit. I'm okay with that now. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe in Brighton, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hi. I wish to record a funeral from Paris, France. It would be on Monday at 5 o'clock in the morning, and in that I probably won't be up. I'd like to be able to download this, either on my Mac or Linux. Do you have some kind of a? Do you know of a good app or? Some source for downloading this. It's this one time.
How is it being broadcast? Where would you watch it? YouTube, Zoom?
YouTube, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Generally speaking, the creator of the YouTube video can allow it to be downloaded, and then there's just a little download button right under the video. There are a myriad of YouTube downloaders available. YouTube breaks them as fast as they can because they don't want you to download YouTube videos.
Right. Under Linux, there's one called YouTube-DL. And that works on many, not all, but on many YouTube videos. You just put YouTube-DL space and then the URL for that, YouTube.com/?watch=, and then that weird...
One of the best ones on the Mac is called Downie, D-O-W-N-I-E. It lets you download video from 1,000 different video sources. Facebook, Vimeo, YouTube, Instagram.
So does YouTube DL.
Yeah, pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I see.
So if it's on YouTube, it should... I mean, 99% of the time, it's available to watch at any time on YouTube. And if you wanted to download it, that button is there unless they have actively disabled it.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks. Bye-bye, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a lot of them will also let you pick which quality stream you want. So if the other end is pushing a low-quality stream for like a cell phone and a high-quality stream for a TV, you can pick which stream you want as well.
Right. And if you have, for those of you who use Linux, mPlayer can be set in crontab, and from the command line you can say, and I do this every Saturday for Soundbites, record the audio. Yep. I don't bother to record the video, but I record the audio. So every Saturday at noon, it starts a recording. Every Saturday at 2, it stops, and we're on our way.
And
so
that's a little unfortunate because there's a malicious program on the Mac called mPlayer.
Oh, no kidding.
Taking on the reputation of a good program to trick you into downloading it for your Mac because you thought, your Windows friend said it was good.
Right. But yeah, so there's a lot you can do. And then there are programs like Total Recorder, which will record it audio on, this is on Windows, at any time, anywhere. And I think if you pay, you get the video version. I think that's how that works. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites. We are on Jazz 90.1. Please vote in the poll at soundbites.org, and we will be back on the other side with a whole lot more Soundbites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Brian from Gates, New York on the line. What's up, Brian?
Not much, guys. you said you went to a different donut shop this morning?
Yeah.
Well, didn't seem to bother you. They weren't terrible donuts, I guess. I've been watching.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm enjoying them. I don't,
yeah, it's just that the other shop is a little bit better.
Yeah, the quality is definitely there.
Yeah, even bad donuts are good donuts.
Yeah.
There you go. This goes back to Larry's call. Similar situation that happened to me this week. I've been doing your advice for years, Nick, of I check my balance every morning.
Yep.
And make sure everything's right. And I often check it in the afternoon, late in the afternoon, just in case.
You know,
it's belt and suspenders time. So Wednesday, I look at it, and I got a weird charge to an ARC. And it's a charge for just south of $200.
Wow.
That I don't recognize. I have no idea. ARC, what is that? The code doesn't mean anything to me. Everything else checks out fine. So I bring it over. I print out my balance sheet from the bank, brought it over. Nice guy, officer of the bank, says, okay, look at it. No, we can't figure out what it is. And he asked me a bunch of questions. He said, well, you answered no to all of them, so I guess we don't know what it is either. We're going to freeze the card, turn it into a hot card so you can't use it, and you're out of luck for a week with your debit card.
Wow.
Today, I get up, pull up my bank account. Oh, son of a gun. It's not this same code. It's a whole different readable code. I know what it is now.
Yeah.
And it is something I did use.
Now try to get your card turned back on. That's going to be tough.
First thing I did was I reprinted that page, went back to the bank, and I said, anything you can do? He said, nah, they turned that to a hot card. It's dead.
Yeah.
So it'll be Thursday at the earliest before I get another card. So I have to go to the bank every couple of days and write another check for $100 or so. Cash.
Well, that's where
real money. This is unusual.
Well, that's where a lot of cards now are starting to offer that you can go online there and lock it.
Lock it. Yeah, I thought about that this morning. I should have done that.
You can lock it, and then that way, no transactions can happen for the length of time until you unlock it.
Unlock it,
and then you don't get the hassle of now trying to remember all the card accounts that you have that card tied to.
Right.
Which can be a pain in the butt.
And you can't start doing that until you get the new card.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
The other thing you can do. The other thing you can do to help cut down on bad guys getting new credit cards in your name is you can freeze your credit report history. With each of the credit agencies now offer a way to freeze your history so that no one can pull your history, no one can submit new credit, so that will stop people from taking out new credit. If you're at a position in your life where you've got your car, you've got your house, you're not going to need any new credit yourself. Right. Or you unfreeze it, get the new credit, and then freeze it again.
Freeze it again, yeah.
I have a friend who does that with her credit card.
Mm-hmm.
It's frozen all the time. Until she's going shopping, and she unfreezes it, buys what she wants, and freezes it again.
Yep.
That's maybe a little much, but maybe not, actually.
Yeah, it depends. Well, depends how bad she was burned.
Right.
Some folks, I know a couple folks that have been burned a couple times, and now, they go in and lock their account and don't unlock it until they're ready to use it.
One of the things that I do nowadays is I try to use my phone far more than I use my card, because my phone, for both PayPal and my bank, use a one-time number when I buy something on my phone. Even if somebody steals that number, it does them zero good.
Yeah.
The funny thing was that...
Go ahead.
When the charge came up, it was a surcharge for using a jet service to fly to California that they didn't tell me they were going to charge. Oh, another $200 service fee.
Wow.
For buying your ticket.
I can't imagine what the service was, but wow.
Yeah.
Must have been great service.
Yeah. best yeah. be first and class. I figured, unfortunately, no.
Jeez. I figured I was going to the ticket agent of the airline I was going to be using. It's not like I was going through a third party.
Yeah. Right.
Broker.
Your credit card statement never has enough digits to show who the charge was sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's left over from the COBOL mainframe days, and probably it still is a COBOL mainframe back there with a limit to the number of characters in that field. So
right.
if your merchant can't come up with an 8-digit number or name that fits in that field, you don't know who it is.
Exactly right.
Well, once the charge had passed and was gone when I got the new statement, it was spelled out what the service was, and I had no trouble identifying where it came from. So it was, it was more like 10 or 12 characters as opposed to that 3 in the first one.
Oh, right, so
You can never know what you're looking at. It drives me crazy.
Right.
Like a code that you can't decipher what it is.
Yep.
Well, gentlemen, I'll let you get back to doing real things like eating donuts.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Enjoy the afternoon.
Have fun.
Bye.
Yeah, like I said, we recommend. I actually check twice a day. I check every morning and every evening.
Same here.
Ain't we got fun? Sorry, Steve, you wanted to sing that?
No.
And we have. I make sure that I've got. My money is my money. Right?
Yeah.
So I check my main accounts. I have checked my PayPal account, my Google account, my bank accounts. So, like I said, it takes very little time and gives me peace of mind all day. I don't know why people don't do it. It's easy. It's fast. It's convenient. Mm-hmm. Do it.
Especially your bank, bank account at least, minimum. Check that.
Right.
And in the morning and then that evening, when you get home. Do it again. It only takes a few minutes, and that way you still have peace of mind. And nowadays you have to be, because they're constantly out there and trying to get at you.
What we're saying, Brian is not, the head of a major corporation. Believe me about Brian. He's not the head of a major corporation or anything like that. They don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There are still targeted attacks. They go after diplomats and like that. But the same code is also being used by random hackers with bots to go after everybody.
If they get $5 out of your account, that's $5 they didn't have before.
Yeah. And it costs them nothing to get it.
And they
so
do that
$5 ahead.
Yeah, and they do that to a million people, it adds up.
That's exactly right.
So even if it's a few bucks here, a few bucks there, like you say, it's a
computer.
Pretty
soon you're talking real money.
That doesn't sleep, doesn't need to take a break. It just runs your program.
And it essentially costs you nothing.
Yeah.
A little bit of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
You're done. Yep. All right. Google's latest patch for Pixel devices running Android 12 is here and contains the newest security patches, enables VoLTE, voice over LTE calling features on certain networks. This is similar to the latest beta upgrade for Android 13, which dropped last Monday for eligible devices. However, the update comes a couple of days later than usual, since Monday was a national holiday here in the U.S. Besides addressing security issues, the most notable change to this update is the addition of VoLTE for the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro in Asia, Pacific, Europe, the Middle East, and Africa networks. We also saw Google issue an update last week to enable the same capability in the Pixel 3 and 3 XL. So that older devices are not left without connectivity in the aftermath of the 2G and 3G network shutdowns. Yes, that's right. The 2G and 3G networks are shutting down. So if your phone only does 2G or 3G, time for a new phone. Supported Pixel devices, which are the Pixel 4 and newer running Android 12, will receive the OTA or over-the-air update. However, the rollout will happen in phases over the next week or so. So you should receive a notification once your device is ready for it. But you can also check for the update by going to Settings, System Updates, which I did, and I'll tell you my experience after I finished reading the news. Voice over Long-Term Evolution, or VoLTE. Yes, LTE stands for Long-Term Evolution.
It didn't last very long, though.
No, it did not. And it wasn't much of an evolution. So other than that, it was perfect.
Short-lived.
LTE, high-speed wireless communication standard for mobile phones and data terminals. Basically, this means you can place a phone call over your LTE connection, or as most of us call it, 4G. VoLTE gives you the ability to use more bandwidth to make phone calls with higher quality audio traveling both ways. When you're on a call with someone else who's using VoLTE, you should notice the difference in call quality on both ends. You might also notice calls connect faster if you're calling someone near you. So if you've got a stopwatch, try it. You know, other than that, you're not going to notice. This update can take quite a while, so do it when you have a lot of free time and make sure your phone is charging when you do it. Are you up to date? Give us a call if you can. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I did this update yesterday. It took forever. It took a while to download, and then the update itself, it was at 60% for what I swear was an hour. I was doing other things, so I would just look over to the phone every once in a while. But, man, it sat there forever at like 60%. And then all of a sudden, next time I looked over, it was done. But it was an hour. It was a good part of an hour, at least. But it updated just fine. When I rebooted, it came back up, and it was fine. I haven't noticed any difference, but who uses their phone for calling people anymore? What the heck is that? But if you're going to do this update, A, make sure you have plenty of time, and B, make sure your phone is plugged in and charging.
I say it'd be probably a good idea just to do it at night.
Right.
Just before you're going to bed, you know, your phone's plugged in, start it and just let it sit there in the on the charger and let it do its thing. And you, by the time you wake up in the morning, it'll all be done.
Yep, that's exactly right. So, yeah, if you're impatient, you can do it by going, like we said, to settings, system, and system updates. But otherwise, just wait. It'll come to you when it comes to you. Google phases these things out so they don't overload their server. And they hit the Pixel phones first because those are Pixel phones. And part of the problem with non-Pixel phones is, the big dog has to be the last one to mark the tree, right? Yep. So when Google makes a change, they push it out to Pixel phones because they own Pixel phones. But if it goes, if you own a Samsung, Motorola, or whoever it is phone, it goes to those companies first. They then have to add their own stuff. Samsung in particular adds an incredible amount of bloatware before they push it out. And so it may take a while to come to you, but it should be coming pretty soon. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Fairport, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
So I'm an old guy, so I'm caught in a do loop. And what I don't understand, and I hope you guys can put it into succinctly, what's up with the digital mining that's going on? And how come they need so many computers and so much power to run this thing? Almost everything to do with computers that I know of is just real light power consumption.
Yeah.
What's going on with that?
Okay, so
math is hard.
Math is hard, and that's the point behind crypto mining. The way crypto mining works, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Dogecoin, all the coins.
Whatever you want to call it.
The way crypto mining works is the way you get two ways to get the Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency. You can buy it with real U.S. dollars, or you can mine it. And the way you mine it is you have to solve incredibly difficult, complex, long math problems. And that requires a lot of computing time and a lot of computing effort. So the faster your computer is, the more computing power, in particular, the more math power, which means GPUs, graphical processing units. They call them graphical processing units, but what they do best is math, really fast math, which is why for years you couldn't buy a decent video card. They were all being snapped up by the crypto miners to buy Bitcoin.
In fact, there have been specific chips, application-specific integrated circuits, specifically designed to mine bitcoins. And the way Bitcoin is designed is the more bitcoins are mined, the harder it gets to mine the next one.
Right.
The classic story from Steve Gibson, when Bitcoin first came out 10 years ago now, wasn't it? He did a podcast on the technology of how Bitcoin and crypto encryption works. So he threw a quad i7 together and started a Bitcoin miner on it one night. Next morning, he had 50 Bitcoins.
Nice.
He did the podcast, erased the computer, and threw away the wallet. Because it was, you know, 50 Bitcoins would get you a wave from a, you know, window. Yeah, no big deal.
And they were about a penny a piece.
Yeah, now we start, you know, Bitcoin hit $70,000 per coin for a minute there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're rough having
and
that.
So,
But you know, back then it was really easy to get Bitcoins.
Right.
And now it's much, much, much harder.
It's very hard to get them, and they're worth, well, up until very recently, they were worth tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars a piece. Now, of course, cryptocurrency is crashing big time. So
it's down to 21,000.
Yeah. And that's just Bitcoin. There are others that are under a penny.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find that prices for graphics cards are starting to come down. But the short answer is crypto mining is done by math. Math is very hard. GPUs do math, but they take a lot of processing power, and that translates to a lot of electricity.
And so eventually the cost of the electricity you're buying to mint your bitcoins can exceed the value of the bitcoins you're actually mining. So you'll often see a lot of bitcoin miners where power is cheap next to hydroelectric dams or something like that. There's actually a power plant in upstate New York that brought one of their extra boilers online that wasn't being used by the town, so they could mine Bitcoin by the power plant itself. And so that's caused kind of an uproar in the community because, in essence, tax dollars are mining Bitcoins.
So is a Bitcoin basically a bunch of numbers? Is that really what it is? I mean, I guess I'm trying to figure out what's the intent, the value of it. I mean, did somebody identify these all and throw them out into the internet and now we're trying to retrieve them? I mean, is that kind of how it works?
No, the technical term for cryptocurrency, you might want to write this down, is a Ponzi scheme.
Ah!
Basically what happens is somebody says, this coin is worth $1,000. So everybody goes, holy moly, $1,000, I better get some. Which means the price goes up and up and up and up, and then somebody wakes up one morning and says, yeah, no, it's not really worth $1,000. And the price comes down and down and down and down. So we've talked about this a number of times. There's a thing called rug pulling. When somebody creates a cryptocurrency, they only put out about 10% of the amount. They keep 90% for themselves. So what happens is you buy crypto coins and the price goes way up and way up and way up. I own 90% of the coin. One day I think, you know what? I've made $100 million. I'm selling them off. So I go down to the Cayman Islands and I sell my cryptocurrency for what ends up being, say, $90,000 or $80 million. I'm happy. I got $80 million. Suddenly the rest of the world wakes up and says, wow, the Nick coin crashed because somebody sold 80% of the stock.
Yep.
Okay.
And when they designed Bitcoin,
but I made my money, so screw you.
They intentionally designed it so Bitcoin can never have more than 21 million coins.
Right.
And right now we're at 18.7 million.
Right.
About one coin is minted every 10 minutes or so.
Yep.
And
that's from those people like you're talking about who have giant servers spending. And the fact is most people spend more money on electricity than they make in cryptocurrency.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, interesting. You've cleared it up a lot more than I've heard before. So anyway, yeah, I appreciate the input there, but yeah, I computers use just tiny amounts of electricity compared to, say, like an electric motor or something like that. So to say that you've got a whole power plant converted to it is really just... It blows my mind of how much computing's going on.
Well, it depends on the size of your computer, doesn't it? And they're talking huge machines.
Right now, your processor is typically 10 or 20 watts. Some of the higher-end processors might be 50 watts. You know, 10 years ago, a 1,000-watt computer was no big deal. That was typical.
Right. So you've got 50 watts in your computer, but you've also got it filled with a couple of 80 or 100 or 120-watt graphics cards. And you can have, you know, up to 8 of them in a computer. So do the math. That's how much energy, that's the kind of power supply you need, and that's the kind of energy you're using in order to mine cryptocurrency. So it's not just, you know, you can, in fact, mine cryptocurrency on a Raspberry Pi 4, and somebody did the math, and you will only lose a penny a day.
Yep. And it was also designed so that the more Bitcoins that are generated, the fewer you get for each mining block. So in the early days, it was 50 Bitcoins per block. Now it's 6.
Right.
Yeah.
So, cryptocurrency.
My 401k is safe.
What?
My 401k is safe. I'm not invested.
Well, I hope you're not invested in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies.
Right.
It's like a lot of the other things. If you're in first, you're set. If you're not, you know, you're screwed.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks. Have fun.
Yes, you too.
Look, I hear this all the time. I'm going to get email now. I'm in cryptocurrency and I'm making a lot of money. Okay, you've made a lot of money on paper. What are you spending it on? Who's taking cryptocurrency these days?
My son is into cryptocurrency, and he had a big loss last year.
Yes, he did. And you know, are you really keeping a spreadsheet? How much money did you spend in electricity compared to how much money you have in Bitcoin? How much money did you spend on the computer you bought compared to how much money you have in cryptocurrency? What can you buy in real spending power with your cryptocurrency? I know a guy who tried to buy a car. They said you could buy this car with crypto coin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, one Bitcoin, $50,000, $80,000, whatever it was, the point. He goes to the bank and it goes to the dealer, says, okay, here's my, I got my wallet, I got my one Bitcoin. No, sorry, price has fallen. It's two Bitcoins now. I don't have two Bitcoins. Well, too bad, no car.
It can fluctuate hourly.
You can fluctuate minutely.
Minutely, yeah.
So, you know, there are places on the internet you can go and look at the current price of cryptocurrency. And I suggest that you do that. There are places you can go and look at the you know, monthly chart. And I suggest you do that because you will find that many of them are tanking. Many of them are tanking. Anyway, that's the end of the first hour of this show, but don't go away. Unlike cryptocurrency, there's a whole lot more coming your way on the other side of the break. More Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more Nick Francesco, and a whole lot more you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll answer your computer questions. We'll answer your cryptocurrency questions. We'll answer your finance questions, but don't take our advice for that stuff.
We don't even play them on TV.
That's exactly right. So take a quick bio break, but we'll all be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Vote in the poll. Don't forget, you can do that all week long at soundbites.org. We've got 29 votes in the poll so far, and I'm already patched, thanks. It's not quite half. But I'm going to read the news, and you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. While Microsoft announced earlier this year that it would block VBA, Visual Basic...
For applications.
For applications, thank you. Macros on downloaded documents, basically macros on downloaded documents by default. They said on Thursday that it will roll back this change based on feedback until further notice. I believe much of that feedback could not be read on the air. The company has also failed to explain the reason behind this decision and is yet to publicly inform customers that VBA macros embedded in malicious Office documents will no longer be blocked automatically and access Excel, PowerPoint, Visio, and Word. The change began rolling out in version 2203, starting in early April of 2022. That's this year. For those of you who, never mind, with general availability to be reached in June of this year, this was a welcome and highly expected change, given that VBA macros are a popular method to push a wide range of malware strains via phishing attacks with malicious Office document attachments. With VBA macros blocked by default, everyone was expecting the attacks that delivered malware, such as information-stealing Trojans and malicious tools used by ransomware groups, to be automatically thwarted. On systems where VBA macros auto-blocking is enabled, customers see a security risk notice. Microsoft has blocked macros from running because the source of this file is untrusted. It's a security alert. If it's clicked, the warning sends users to an article containing information about the security risks behind threat actors' use of Office macros and instructions on enabling those macros if absolutely necessary. While Microsoft has not shared the negative feedback that led to the rollback of this change, users have reported that they are unable to find the unblock button to remove the mark of the web from downloaded files, making it impossible to enable macros. Other administrators felt that the decision was a problem for end users who would find it burdensome to unblock files that they download every day, if not multiple times per day. So, how clean are your macros? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I always got an annoyance, I guess is the right word, out of the warning that came up when you open a Word file and it says, there are macros embedded in this Word file. Do you want to embed them? I don't know. Somebody sent me a file. I don't know if there's supposed to be macros in it or not.
Right.
And everyone just hit yes.
Right, and everybody just hits yes. And that's the problem, which Microsoft decided they were going to fix. By blocking macros. And then, of course, everybody says, but we use macros in our business.
Don't block my macros, just block the malicious ones. Well, right. How do you tell?
You can't tell.
How does a computer tell what's malicious and not?
You could do it by having some sort of signing.
Yeah.
But then that requires a lot of code and a lot of teaching, because the way you sign things is using something like public key encryption. And that's hard.
And the bad guys are starting to sign their apps. Because one thing Google and Microsoft and Apple have all done now is that your app has to be digitally signed to go into the App Store. So the bad guys just digitally sign it now.
Right.
And until they're caught, they sign as many apps as they can.
Right. And there are ways to make sure that using public key encryption, Steve can make sure that the thing I sent him really came from me. Whether it's an email, even a text message, a file, whatever. But setting that up is hard. Yeah. It is not easily automatable. There are a series of steps you have to go through, and do not skip one.
Mm-hmm.
Do not skip one.
Or you're done.
Basically, you have to.
And both ends have to do it.
Right. And so the easiest way to set it up is both people get into the same room and share their codes between them physically.
Right.
What if you want to email someone on the other end of the country or world?
Right.
You can't do it over the internet because you can't be sure it's them.
Well, yeah. With public key encryption, you can. But again, setting it up is hard. You have to put yourself in a public keychain. The other person has to access that public keychain. Mm-hmm. They have to be using the same kind of software that it just gets to be
very complicated.
A lot. And, again, the internet was set up in the days when it was a half a dozen people in a couple of universities across the country. They didn't need any of this nonsense. And so they didn't have it, and they didn't plan for it. And now adding it would be hard. I use Thunderbird. And Thunderbird does have a mechanism to do this. You can encode your email. So if I send Steve an email, he mm-hmm. knows it came from me. It's verified. It's encoded. The problem is setting it up.
Yeah.
Again, that's where the problem comes.
And there lies the challenge.
And therein lies the challenge, and therein lies the pain, and people aren't doing it. So public key encryption is really the way to go. It's been proven for 40 years now to be robust and safe and quite usable if you pick a good password and blah, 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 blah. But it's still not
100%
easy to do, and that's where the problem lies. And the same would be true of macros. If I could sign my macro with a public key, with my private key, which can only be decrypted with Steve, with my public mm-hmm. key that Steve knows,
mm-hmm.
Then I could send him a macro, and he would know because it opened
from
that
him.
It came from me.
Yep.
Right? But
it's got a layer of security.
But again, Microsoft would have to write all that code.
Hmm.
And then they would have to teach people how to create public key and private keys and how to share the public key and make sure you share the public key, not the private key, and all of that. So until any or all of that gets automated, they're just not going to do it. And they're solution, therefore, was brute force. We just will shut it all down.
Yep.
Nobody gets a macro. And then multiple companies said, we use macros constantly internally because we write, code, let's say spreadsheet code for our company or
a
Word document that goes and reads data from other places and in a database and all this other. And that's all automated in a macro, and we paid somebody a lot of money to write those macros,
mm-hmm.
and you're telling me I can't run them anymore? Or worse, every time I open that spreadsheet, I have to okay using that macro.
So
well, and that's not
you
hard.
You can automate that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's not actually hard, but it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind doing it once, but I don't want to have to do it a second time. And in order to make that happen, somebody would have to write the code. And that annoys Microsoft. So if the choice is between annoying you and annoying me, I'd rather annoy you. And Microsoft wins because they wrote the code.
Yeah.
But then people said this is bad.
Well, again, it's also a layer of, which with everything, laziness.
Yes.
Just even folks getting down to the simple thing of creating different passwords. That's too hard. Too many passwords to remember.
Well, I'll just put a one on the end of the password I always use.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a layer of laziness, and it goes right on into installing software. They just get click happy. Bah, 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 bah. I'm done. And then they wonder why, they got hacked or spyware, malware is on their machines or anything else. Because it's got to be instant gratification.
Yep.
We're to the society now that, took all of 15 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, and then you come to the training section. right?
Forget
that. What happens is if you have to click OK for every legitimate macro, you are trained to click OK, which means when you get a bad macro, instead of reading what's going on, where it came from, whatever, you just click OK.
Yeah.
Because you've been trained to click OK.
If
they could automate it with public and private key encryption, you'd be much better off.
I've been getting this error message that my hard drive is dying for about 6 months, and I just click ignore. Now my computer won't boot.
Right.
Yeah. Is that a problem?
Can you fix it?
No. Worse is I've been getting an error message for about 6 months. What's the error message? Oh, I don't know. I just click ignore.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now your hard drive won't boot? I wonder what that message might have been. I wonder.
Mm-hmm. I read a story about a guy that got hired at a company to generate reports based on, like, production data or something. And the person that was training them would open two spreadsheets, look at one cell from this, you know, machine, and then type the numbers again in the other machine, in the other spreadsheet for the totals. Didn't know how to do copy and paste.
Right.
Didn't know how to import. So the guy wrote a macro, took 10 minutes to run, and that was his 8-hour day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I put a time delay in it, so it took about 4 hours.
Yeah. Yes.
and then about 6 months later, the boss said, well, think you can do that any faster? So I changed the time delay to be 2 hours. Yeah.
There you go. Suddenly it's twice as fast.
Yeah. Everyone's happy, and I play on my phone all day.
Yeah. And that's the way it works. You have to understand that it's that kind of macro that would have been blocked by Microsoft. So he would have been back to manually typing cell data all day long.
Yeah,
and then having to verify it. And you know humans make mistakes. You know that. That's not even a maybe. So there are reasons that macros are used, and they are good reasons. The problem is, every good reason also leads to a bad thing, the light side and the dark side.
Right. Well, folks, to equate it to something, you know, say you just do a spreadsheet of what your utility bill is. You know, you can sit there and summarize each month, you know, average it, and then you can go down and put a side total over to know what your average is. Because then you can have it divide by 12, and it'll do that for you. And macros are very easy, simple. They're very handy. They make life great. That was the best thing that came out when they first started doing Excel, because I can remember back in the day, some folks would sit there, and they could spend hours trying to create macros to do stuff. And they've just simplified it because they've created other libraries with those built-in functions. They don't have to create the function to, say, do a sum. Back in the day, they actually had to create that function so that they could call that one task to do that. So life has gotten a lot simpler, and a lot of it, again, we take it for granted. We just, you know, oh, I just click on it here, and it does it sum. You know, so macros play a big part in a lot of people's lives, especially for banking and tax people and a multitude of different industries.
I got to tell you this story. I've told this before. When I was at a local bank, this guy comes storming into my office. He's so angry. I understand you're the Excel guru around here. Well, I know Excel. Well, I'm having a problem with a macro. Okay, let's see it. He says, fix this. And he grabs this, you know, back in the day when it was accordion paper. Mm. I had a desk in my office 6 feet long that I'd set up computers on to work on or to, you know, whatever. So it was empty at the time. He throws this thing on there. It laps off one side. It laps off the other side. So it's this gigantic single macro. Which is the right way to do it to begin with. As it settles to the desk, my eyes happen to light on the fact that he had a print statement in the middle without a semicolon.
That'll do it.
As it hit the table, I went, well, there's your problem, and walked away. He didn't believe me. He calls me up later, and he goes, how did you do that?
Because I'm good.
Because I'm the guru. That's how I did that.
You didn't actually tell him how long it would really take you, did you, Maddie?
Exactly. But the problem with that is you then gain a reputation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you don't want that reputation.
Uh-uh.
You really do not.
No, you just got this is going to take a while. I'll give you a call, you know?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Like you say, oh, fold it up.
But the way he came in with his attitude just really porked me off, and I just thought, I don't want him in my office. There's your problem. Pointed to it, walked away.
I had that happen once with Lotus 1-2-3 in the very early days. I was at a large manufacturing company locally looking at spreadsheets as a summer intern, and I found an error in one of the macros that changed production, but like by 20%.
Wow.
Whoa.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. Well, and that's the other problem. Back in the day, and even today, when you have a programmer who writes code, it gets vetted, it gets peer-reviewed.
You hope.
Yeah. 6 ways from Sunday. Then you get some cowboy sitting in his or her office just writing macros. Nobody checks them. Nobody sees, you know, when I was at RIT, Dave Ballard, who worked for me, Ed still is there. I tell people he took my job. Dave was our checker. Dave could break anything. You give Dave code, he'd break it. Some way or other, he would find a way to break it.
Ooh.
So, yeah, good. We would give Dave our code.
Yep.
Dave, check this.
I always like that.
5 minutes later. Yeah, it doesn't work if I do this.
Well, why the hell did you do that?
Right, exactly. But you know what? Somebody's going to do
it. Oh, yeah. You got to take that, you know.
Yeah.
You can't assume.
I always love putting numbers in a alpha field, and alphas in a number field, because they don't check. Sanitize your input. Still today, 50 years later of programming, sanitize your inputs would stop so many problems.
That's exactly right. I wrote some code the other day for Mastermind Lounge, and I wrote it, and I saved it, and I tested it, and it worked, and it tested with everything I gave it. And then I stopped, and I said, but I didn't test it like I was trying to break it. So I went back and rewrote the code with even more sanitizing, and then I couldn't break it. Trying everything. I should send it to Dave.
There you go.
Good old Bobby drop tables.
Yeah,
see little Bobby, we call him.
See if he can do it.
But yeah, you really sanitize your inputs. It's the most important thing you can do as a programmer. It really is. Because, you know, you're going to get malicious, particularly if it's code on the internet, you're going to get malicious people trying to break in. But equally, you're going to get people who aren't paying attention, who are just not as bright as you thought they were, and they're just going to screw up.
Mm-hmm. Why would you even do something like
One of the things I see all the time is people say, I don't know what I put in the database because instead of hitting tab to go from field to field, I hit enter. And
Oh, it didn't skip it. It wound up.
Right. It submitted the
submitted
form.
Submitted instead of.
Well, write your code so enter doesn't submit the form. You can do that. That's not a difficult thing. And you have to actually click this. Well, I just want to hit enter. No, I'm sorry. I can either solve your one tiny little laziness or sanitize my inputs.
Yeah, so they got to get over to an enter field.
Right.
Your log, say, log just button.
One more tab puts you on the enter button, then you can hit it.
Okay. Yeah, it's got to be an enter button.
Submit or cancel. Yeah.
Submit or cancel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a. You need
stupid database won't accept my input. Every time I hit cancel, it just loses everything I've done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because that's one software package I use quite a bit. The guy changed it so you can either hit the spacebar or the enter key, and it'll tab you through all the different fields.
Yep.
And you got to get to the last one so you can keep hitting enter, and it'll keep cycling till it gets to the log.
Right.
And you got to be on that. Then when you hit enter, it will log it.
That's
otherwise, if you're on any other field, It just moves you to the next one.
And well, I had a guy call me up, says, this is the thing you wrote, and it doesn't work for me. Well, what's the problem? Well, it won't let me put in this number. Okay, what's the number? 12.7. Okay. If you take a look right next to that field, in bold red letters, it says whole numbers only.
That's a whole number?
It's exactly his answer. This is a whole number. No. Okay. A whole number means no decimal points, no percentages, no. It just
no dots.
Otherwise, it's a fractional number.
Right. It's an integer. It's 1 to a billion, but not 1.4.
So I told you algebra would come in handy.
Exactly. He said, well, why did you do that? I said, because it's in the specifications you gave me.
Yep.
This is supposed to be a whole number.
Oh.
Well, why don't you just drop it? No. That's not how this works. If you try to put in a part of a number, a decimal point number, I have to assume it's because you wanted one, and it's not my job to correct your input. It's your job to put in the right number.
Yeah.
That's just the way that
and
works.
It's less steps if he's going to put in 4.0. You right. know, why waste the extra steps putting in the point zero?
Right.
Just put in the whole number.
But, you know, your specification was whole numbers only. I put in red, bold red, whole numbers yep. only. So
They
don't read. And apparently the guy didn't know what a whole number meant.
We ran into an issue the other day with someone was paying with one of the apps. Most of the apps assume a decimal point.
Right.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh.
I've seen that.
Yeah. Man. The app they were picking didn't assume the decimal point. And so when
you're putting in 10 times as much.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's no consistency.
Yep. I've seen that. Man, I hate that. You need, well, and that's the problem, of course. There's no consistency across apps. Because nobody at the beginning of time yep. said this is the way it needs to be done.
Right.
Well, but it also depends on the circumstances of what you.
Yeah, each app was developed by completely separate people who have their own ideas on how to do something. I agree that it's technically better to manually specify where the decimal point goes.
Right.
But it's more convenient to not.
Right. I had an app for putting in gas information. So, you know, you put in mm-hmm. the amount and it would add that extra 9 for you.
Yeah,
oh, like 23.9
9/10 of a cent. No, no, because I look at 2.499. I put in 2.499. I end up with 24.999. That's not right. Shows you how long ago I used that app. And yet, if you put in your odometer, it didn't put in a decimal point. If you put in a dollar amount, this is how much it costs a gallon. It didn't put it in. Rather, it did for that, but it didn't for the other stuff. And it drove me crazy. I finally had to stop using the app. Don't be inconsistent. Yep. You do what you want, but don't be inconsistent.
I was at a gas station once where the owner, manager, whatever, apparently programmed the pump wrong that morning. He assumed the trailing 9 and it wasn't there. So gas was 3.499. Instead of 3.4999.
Yeah.
So I got gas for 34 cents a gallon.
That's not. You should have called me.
Yeah, I went in. I went in and told the clerk, and she said, "Really? Wow, the owner's out of town for the weekend. There's nothing I can do about it."
You should have called all of us. Yeah. Oh yeah.
It was at the Turkey Hill Farm in Pennsylvania.
I've been there a number of times.
Yeah. Yep.
That's funny.
In fact, the only thing was. We're waiting to get, so we're driving home, we're waiting to get gas, and we're trying to find the best gas prices, and as soon as we hit Pennsylvania, gas start skyrocketing. Well, let's try the next exit. Finally, you're sucking fumes, we have to go to this exit.
Right.
Most expensive.
It would have been the most expensive if that decimal point was in the right place.
Yeah, right. So you won.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. There's 31 votes in the poll. You are listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and truly grateful to you, because it is with your and solely with your support that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Underhite.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, I don't do time, man. We are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Brian did from Pavilion, New York. What's up, Brian?
Groovy, groovy, you hepcat.
You know, it is the 20s. We should be using 20s slang.
Yeah.
Jump and jive, baby.
Jump and jive. Slip me five, Jackson.
You got it, man. Love-hate relationship with my Pi 4. Some days I just want to put that in the trap flinger and just pull it. Other times I just love this thing. And I've gotten pretty proficient with breaking it and getting it running again.
Nice.
Practice makes perfect.
Yes, yes, it does. And it likens me back to the 3.1 days. You know, you got to participate.
Yeah, what?
It's not handed to you,
right?
You know? But what I've done while I was messing around with this thing, I actually happened to fumble it, and I did some damage to the HDMI out port, the number one port. I get it to work, and of course, messing with it, it's not a very valuable piece of equipment, even though you can't get them anymore right now.
Right.
But I've been looking out, trying to figure out how to switch to HDMI 2.
Yeah.
Is it there? I'm assuming it can be done.
Yes.
I couldn't find anything that had any coaches to it on the net. So.
Right, right. So you want to be able to switch your default HDMI port.
Yes, I damaged the port. Right. I'm capable of, like, desoldering it and fixing it, but I'm getting older. I'm not as steady as I used to be.
I've done this. It doesn't matter which port you hook up to, as you do it before you boot up.
Okay.
Doesn't it auto-detect what port the monitor's plugged into?
Right. It just picks the port that the monitor's plugged into.
So, yeah, if you have your monitor on and it's set for, HDMI, DMI port 2, then when you boot up the Raspberry Pi, it'll find it there.
Well, I never do the simple things.
Yeah.
Why would I do that? That would just be dumb.
Okay.
Yeah. So the theory is, and again, it's a theory, but I've done it and I know it works.
Yeah, same here.
If you plug into the other HDMI port before you boot, that's the secret.
Well, that's clever. Yeah, I'm also getting it might be a consequence of me doing a little bit of damage here. The video seems to be choppy. Now, I didn't buy the high end for. But the video, I don't recall it being choppy before I...
Is there anything in the setup, you know, if you do the, what is it, Control F, and get into the setup, whether you can change it in there? I haven't played much with the configuration of the Pi.
I always end up getting in trouble and reloading every time I get in there and mess with the setup on it. So.
Yeah, the other thing is, have you tried a different HDMI cable? Because if you...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Sure
if
did.
You've got a 2 gig Pi 4, say, and you're doing a number of things as well as running video, you may well see choppy video.
I don't really do much with it. It's mostly just it's like using it for background music. I listen to you guys on it, and you know, it's certainly not something I would use for a main computer. It's more you know, a hobby fun thing.
Yeah, I actually, mine is headless. I don't even have a monitor on it, and I do the same. I SSH into it to write code, and I listen to music off it and all of that stuff. But I don't even have a monitor on mine.
I'm seeing a command called HDMI force that you could put in your boot config.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can do that in the config.txt, which I have done. And that's, I actually initially had to do that when I first got it because I couldn't get video at all. And one thing I would recommend if anybody's thinking about getting into Pi, don't use the power supply that comes with it. They're just junk.
They're junk. I actually, for my Pi 400, I burned two of them out before I realized it was not just bad equipment. It was the power supply.
Yep.
Right. I have an old Chromebook USB-C power supply.
Right.
And that just lights it right up. It actually works very well with that.
Yep. 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 So, yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's the one. I mean, I love my Pis, all of them. I do not like their USB-C power supply.
No.
They're garbage. They're
cheap. China junk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually had one over. He didn't start fire, but I went to go. I'm like, okay, I went to grab it. It was quite warm to the touch, and I'm like, well, that's not going to work for me under my desk covered with dust.
So, exactly.
You know?
Oh, it will for starting the fire.
Well, listen, get them made to dust it every day.
Oh man, I will play this back for my wife. I'm sure she will be over your
not
house
your
to
wife,
talk to you about the situation.
Your maid.
Oh, they're not one and the same?
Hey, no, believe me. Our house has maid quarters in the attic. I've never seen the woman. She's just lazy.
Yeah.
I'm just at work all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, hey, you guys are the boss, man. I've been with you since the Dr. Bob days. And
nice.
I actually did I did post a thread about the poll, and I wasn't sure if I offended anybody on it. I was about the latency of the poll.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, yeah.
Well, my thing is, just from participating in the website and being with you guys as long as I have, if you were to post the poll, just a suggestion, of course, not telling you your job, post a poll after the show, then I have all week to vote in. I don't feel like I'm participating.
You can vote all week long.
It's for sure, but is that on the poll that's up there now, right?
Right. The current poll is the only one you can vote on, but you can vote all week.
Right. I don't know. It was just fun to hear it announced, and I was part of that. But
there you go.
It's all good.
Well, okay, and then you're the reason I added click here to vote in the poll at any time.
I am the abuser, yes.
Yeah.
But you're the guy who sells chocolate covered coffee beans. So
yes,
you only start a fight with me, mister.
Yeah. I love my chocolate covered espresso beans.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, you ruined my life.
I had a friend. My wife runs a coffee stand at the public market, and one day she bought 5 pounds of chocolate covered espresso beans, left them in a car in the summer.
Oh,
they came out. And they were in a bag, of course, but they were in a bowl in the back, and so they came out bowl shaped. She couldn't sell them. She could, you know.
Yeah.
So I took them to work.
Oh.
And I was
they're just ruined, yeah.
Yeah, but they still tasted great. They just looked like a bowl. So I had a guy sitting with me, and we were discussing some stuff that he needed done technically, and he's picking pieces off of it and eating them. And I said, no, you really need to stop. These are very – he says, I drink coffee all day long. This will be fine. Eating them. About an hour later, he comes back in. He says, okay. I really like the coffee beans. Don't give me any more. Don't give me any more. Okay.
All right. Well, bless you guys, and hey, thanks for taking my call, okay?
You too. Thank you. Have fun.
You bet. Bye.
So, yeah, vote in the poll anytime. The poll will be up all week long. Right now, we only have 32 votes, so vote in the poll. Those of you listening overseas, take a minute, log in, vote. I know hundreds of you listen to this podcast every single week. And we would love it if you would also vote in the poll. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, if I can get to the right page, our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I have been using a Dell 32-bit laptop computer because it had the parallel port for printing. But I have no great use for it now, so I'm kind of looking around at different 32-bit operating systems. And I happen to have come upon two of them. I just wonder if you've ever tried to use them on your older machines. One of them is very recent. It's Raspberry Pi for 32-bit computers.
Yes.
And, well, what do you think of it? I mean, I'm looking at some of the snapshots, and it looks kind of on the crude side because I guess it uses the Pixel desktop environment.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's part of the problem, 32-bit. There's only so much you can do.
Right.
You are limited in the amount of RAM that you can have, the amount of memory you can use,
right,
and the way that memory is used. So you are going to find that there are a number of compromises.
Plus hard disk space.
Yeah.
It's gonna affect, you know, as far as how much hard disk space it can handle too. Because that's going back to the old days of when we used to have to take a 500 meg hard drive and break it up into all these different partitions.
But there are still a bunch of 32-bit distributions that you can use. You can use Debian, Bode Linux, Alpine Linux, OpenSUSE. So there's a bunch of them that are out there. Linux Mint has a 32-bit version. Zorin has a 32-bit version.
Yeah.
I think they call it Lite at that point.
But
those are the ones that you know, a lot of people love Zorin because it's modern. It's based on Ubuntu. It looks very much like Windows, so it's easy to learn. So you can get Zorin OS Lite for free, and it uses the XFCE desktop, which is my personal favorite.
Because I have been using Q4 OS on these 32-bit machines because it's with Trinity, it's usable, it's very fast, it's with Debian, it gets updated quite often. So I've been happy with it, but I thought, well, could there be something different? I was, as I say, looking at other ones to play with, and I saw this, again, the Raspberry Pi, and I thought, well, I wonder if Nick has been using it. Is it useful? Is it worthwhile enough?
Yeah, Q4 OS is good. Ubuntu Mate also supports 32-bits. Elubuntu does. Peppermint does. So there's a whole bunch of lightweight Linux distributions for older systems. And you should, you know, the beauty of Linux is you can try them all. They're all free.
Yeah, I was just getting, like as I say, getting your opinion if it was fun or not. Because the other one I saw, too, and it looks really different, though, is, and it's Debian-based, too, is Psych OS.
I haven't used that one. I've used Zorin. I've used Mate. I used Elubuntu. Xubuntu is the one I use all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I use with XFCE. Thank you.
And all of those are 32-bit versions. I've used all of them on older systems, and of course it's an older system, so it's going to be slower, you know, but they work great.
Yes, and I was just looking to say for a thumbs up, thumbs down on both of them.
Up.
Okay.
Up all the way around.
Okay, excellent. That's all I need to know, and I will have fun with it. Thank you very much.
There you go. Excellent. Yeah, that's one of the beauties of Linux. It is very adaptable to pretty much anything, and you know, we're kind of at the point where the I have an old little tiny beauty of a laptop that only has 16 meg of RAM in it, and that pretty much doesn't run much of anything anymore. It'll run Puppy Linux, damn small Linux. That's about it.
Remember when that used to be a lot?
Well, that was the point behind this thing.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted one because it had so much RAM in it.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Farmington, New York. What's up, Kevin?
Hi. I just bought a refurbished Microsoft Surface 3 off of Woot for about $100. And I just got it in the mail and playing around with it. It has Windows 10 Home preloaded in it. And I didn't get the keyboard with it, so I'm using it just as a tablet. And when I use it for a few seconds in, like, the horizontal mode, the touchscreen won't work. And so I flip it to vertical, and it'll start working. And then a few seconds later, that'll stop working. So I flip it back to horizontal, and that'll work again. And I've Googled around to see if this was a common issue or not and made sure it had all the updates and everything that I could put on it. And just to know if you had some ideas for me.
Send it back.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but
yeah,
send it back.
Seriously, yeah, that's not normal.
It's not well.
Okay.
Yep.
That's great to know. Yep.
I have used several surfaces, two or three, and they work fine. So that is not a well computer.
Oh. Yeah, there's a short somewhere.
Okay. Yep, great to know. I just didn't know if I should spend a lot of time on this or just put it right back.
Spend zero time on it.
Yeah, it's just add to your frustration.
Yep.
Okay.
And Wood is good. You just got it. There's a warranty. Send it back.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Yep. All right.
Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
For those of you who don't know, how can you not know Woot? But if you don't know Woot, I'm sorry I'm about to tell you this, but Woot is an amazing place to buy awfully good stuff. I think I'd have to say about 70% of the hardware I have, including this watch, came from Woot.
My last computer I just got off because I had, you know, one of my other old Windows machines die, and they had it on sale for Woot. I think I got the whole box, keyboard and mouse, and it was just under $300. I think it was like $279.
Yeah, like, you get.
Oh heck,
you get spoiled.
Yeah,
on Woot, you really get spoiled. It used to be the way it worked was that when it started out, their motto was one day, one deal. They offered one thing at a ludicrously low price. When it was sold out, it was sold out, or they changed it at midnight, Chicago time. Then they got bought by Amazon. Okay. But now it's a much bigger site. They have sections and they sell things.
A lot more stuff.
But, you know, I got my last two smartwatches from it, my last three desktops from it, and I only have one desktop at a time. I don't want you to think I got them spread all over the house. I got my laptop from it. I got everything but my Chromebooks. Everything but my Raspberry Pis, I mean. Pretty much all came from Woot. And they come, you know, you can get them brand new or refurbished or open box or whatever. They're coming from Amazon. And you get their warranty. So in Kevin's case, for example, the minimum warranty is, I think, 90 days, I think. So he gets it. It doesn't work. You send it back. Done. They don't. I've never had a problem.
No.
And they usually replace it with a similar item.
Although a little disconcertingly, I just went to the Woot homepage. Ghostery reports that it blocked 336 trackers.
It's Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
336 trackers on one web page.
Yeah.
That's a little excessive, I would think.
Well, now they've got a oh, that's nice.
The Lenovo IdeaPad,
14-inch laptop. That's
with
nice.
With Windows 11.
Well.
No.
Oh, yeah, and there's the Microsoft Surface tablets again. So they've got them in stock. There you go.
So many of my friends there have gotten bit badly by the Windows 11 update. Matter of fact, I just had another friend. He bought a laptop. And he thought, oh, what the heck? I go to, it wanted to install the Windows 11. And he sent me a message, but I couldn't get back to him right away. So he figured, oh, I'll go ahead and do it. Because my first words would have been, no!
Yeah, exactly.
Because I know of four different programs that we use within the ham world that don't work under Windows 11. Because Windows, in their infamous wisdom, took out a bunch of different drivers that were there automatically.
Yep.
They took the code out. And
so
these
now
other
you
drivers.
Have to get now you have to get the drivers from the manufacturer of the product. They may not have ever made one because it came with Windows.
Well, the other thing is there's this other program that we use. It's called COM0COM. And you can set up COM ports. Yeah, Windows 11 broke that.
Yep.
and it won't work now, which works right up to Windows 10. But they clearly say, no, don't go to Windows 11.
So you may want to get GRC's new In Control to let you be in control of your Windows updates. So it lets you freeze your Windows now, and Microsoft cannot automatically install Windows 11 on you.
Right.
Started out as Never 10, and 3 million people, he said 3 million people downloaded Never 10, so they wouldn't have to upgrade to 10.
Right.
But, yeah, so they've upgraded that to In Control, so you can tell it to tell your PC to stop loading feature releases. It will still load security updates, but you can freeze your Windows 10 at 21H2, the current version if you want. It'll still give you security updates, but it will not load a new feature release until you release control.
And you get that at, did you put up
GRC.com, yep.
Yeah, GRC.com/incontrol.htm.
Matter of fact, the computer that I got from Woot, it's got Windows 11 Pro. And right up on the top screen, I love it. It says, sorry, this computer can't handle Windows 11. I'm like, that's fine with me. Leave it alone because it's not ever going to go to 11. It might go to Xubuntu,
right,
but it is not going to Windows 11.
Right. Well, the first thing I did when I got my latest Dell desktop was put Xubuntu on it. I didn't even care what version of Windows it came with. I didn't want it.
Yep.
I've done that. Well, I did that with my Asus laptop, and I did that with everything but my wife's machine. She likes Windows.
Have you looked at the Framework laptop?
I have not.
Frame.work. It's a company came out with this laptop that's completely modular and completely reassemblable. You've 6 screws, hold it in, and you can replace anything you want. RAM, storage, processor, screen, bezel, camera, keyboard, anything you want, in like 10 minutes.
That could be good, and it could also be dangerous for some folks.
Well, right.
Who just try to jam fit things together.
But it becomes, my grandfather's axe. Replace the head 6 times, replace the handle 10 times, that you keep upgrading your things as newer chips come out, as faster interfaces come out. You just keep adding to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And while the initial thing might be fairly expensive, you want to upgrade the processor.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It starts at a high end laptop price, about $1,000.
Right.
But that's with the 12th gen Intel Core processor. There are several Unixes and Linux that already run on it. That was the other Cory Doctorow I was talking about. He was a ThinkPad guy for decades. Until they sold it to China.
Because
he said he breaks his computer. He's one of those people that just breaks everything looking at it wrong. And so the ThinkPad had a global warranty. So wherever he was on whatever, speaking engagement he was at, when he broke his laptop, he could just get another one.
Right.
And so he told a story about he just had a hip replacement surgery. It was his first day back home. He was still half knocked out on the drugs, and he replaced the hinges on his screen because he broke the screen. And it took about 10 minutes.
It takes about 10 minutes. And those are that's the beauty of a thing like that. You're right. You're going to pay a little more. It's not your $300 budget laptop. But
that when it breaks, you buy a new one.
You buy a new one. But you can do anything you want with it. You can keep that thing around. You change the keyboard, change all of the ports. Change the screen, change the processor, change the video card, change whatever you want to change. For some people, that's a beautiful thing to be able to do, to upgrade as you get the whim and the money and the time and the effort. So,
or even when the battery wears out, it's easy to replace.
Right. Right. Which nothing really has that anymore. I may have to look at that.
Yeah. You?
All right. That's it. That's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank every single person who called us. I want to thank every single person who voted in the poll. I want to thank every single Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco. And, of course, as I said already, all of you. Thank you very much. Please don't forget to vote in the poll. You can do so 24/7 all week long, and we would appreciate seeing more people vote in the poll. It just makes me happy. That's all. That's the only reason. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?